This is DJ Kyle McNeil
of The Sweet Spot, and we are so excited to announce our brand new time slot, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight.
Same great soulful sounds, old and new.
Brand new day, Tuesdays at 10 p.m.
Only on WBAI 99.5 FM.
New York's Pacifica Radio.
Sweet Tuesday, darling Tuesday. Everything is Tuesday, Tuesday, Tuesday.
9 p.m., WBAI New York. FM came to you live with a few portions on recording. And up next, Cat Radio Cafe. Stay tuned.
This is Cat Radio Cafe, a salon of the arts, exploring the creative bounty of New York from WBAI Radio. That's 99.5 on the FM dial. I'm Janet Coleman, and you are?
David Dozer,
the displaced playwright. On tonight's show, we'll be joined by Marx Brothers experts Noah Diamond and Kathy Beal to discuss Marx Fest 2024, a celebration of the legacy of Chico Harpo, Groucho, Gummo, and Zeppo, with over 24 events in the city of their birth. But before we begin, let's remind you that this station has been facing a serious financial crisis that might result in our transmitter being shut down.
Oh, and we'd like to remind you that you can help us save us by making a tax-deductible contribution to our emergency tower fund by calling 212-209-2950 or online at WBAI.org.
Or becoming a BAI buddy. That's a sustaining member of this unique free speech institution, which has been periodically broke for for an amazing 64 years.
That's our system, you see. And then you can become a BAI buddy for as little as $10 a month.
Or you can simply go to our website, WBAI.org, press the big green donate button, and contribute to our emergency tower fund.
Okay, now do it now by calling 212-209-2950. Or go online to WBAI.org and click on that big green donate button.
And here's another, an evergreen method of supporting WBAI. Why have you asked me to come here?
I want you to help me write my will.
How may I help?
Well, how does it begin?
I believe you state your name and that you are of sound mind.
Do I have to prove that?
No, just say so.
And then what?
You say how you want your estate divided.
I don't have an estate.
A living person does not have an estate, but there is estate planning.
You mean for when I will have an estate?
When you are no longer a living person.
Like before I was born?
Yes, but before you were born, you didn't have a name.
And I wasn't of sound mind.
Any other questions?
Who should I leave my money to?
Your spouse, children, brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews, grandchildren, favorite charities.
Ooh, like a radio station?
A listener-sponsored radio station.
Good. I want to leave the bulk of my estate to radio station WBAI. What do I care? I'll be dead anyway.
Right.
These are the laws of my administration. No one's allowed to smoke or tell a dirty joke, and whistling is forbidden.
We're not allowed to tell a dirty joke.
If chewing gum is chewed, the chewer is pursued, and in the who's cow hidden.
If we choose to chew, we'll be pursued.
If any form of pleasure is exhibited, report to me and it will be prohibited. I'll put my foot down, so shall it be. This is the land of the free. The last man nearly ruined this place. He didn't know what to do with it. If you think this country's bad off now, just wait till I get through with it. Country's taxes must be fixed, and I know what to do with it. If you think you're paying too much now, just wait till I get through with it.
Hey,
stand for anything that's crooked or unfair. I'm strictly on the up and up, so everyone beware. If anyone's caught taking graft, and I don't get my share, we stand them up against the wall, and pop goes the weasel.
So everyone beware, crooked or unfair. Don't let the
And now, following Groucho, hard to do, on tonight's show we'll be joined by Marx Brothers experts Noah Diamond and Kathy Beal to discuss Marx Fest 2024, a celebration of the legacy of the great comedy giants Chico, Harpo, Groucho, Gummo, and Zeppo, with over 24 events in the city of their birth, that's New York. The fest takes place over 2 long weekends, the first in Manhattan, the second in Coney Island, and marks the centennial of the brothers' Broadway debut in I'll Say She Is. And you'll hear more about that from Noah Diamond, one of our 2 authorities. Among the notable participants in Marx Fest 2024 are the great actor-comedian Robert Klein, New Yorker staff writer Adam Gopnik, Marx Brothers biographer Robert Bade, New York Times comedy columnist Jason Zinnemann, vaudeville historian Travis D., and Groucho's grandson, Andy Marx. Wow. I wonder how old he is. Noah Diamond will tell us shortly. Noah Diamond restored and adapted the Marx Brothers 1924 masterpiece. I don't know if it was. He'll tell us, too, if it was really that great, but I think it might have been a big, illustrious debut. I'll Say She Is. And Noah also played Groucho in the first ever revivals of I'll Say She Is at the New York International Fringe Festival in 2014 and at the Connolly Theater Off-Broadway in 2016. His other Marxist projects include a trilogy of streaming documentaries created for the Fredonia Marxonia Festival, Home Again, The Marx Brothers and New York City, There's Nothing Like Liberty, The Marx Brothers in America, and If You Get Near a Song, Play It, The Marx Brothers and Music. He's also the author of Give Me a Thrill, The Story of I'll Say She Is, and can be heard on monthly as a co-host of the Marx Brothers Council podcast. We'll hear, I hope, when we can hear that, to come. Kathy Beal played Ruby Mintworth in both the 2014 and 2016 productions of I'll Say She Is, and was co-organizer of Marx Fest 2014, as well as the current festival. She's also an award-winning professional astrologer with over 30 years of forecasting experience. This is going to be good. She is the author of Eat, Drink, and Be Wary, Cautionary Tales and Confessions of a Third-Rate Goddess Traipsing Through a World Gone Weird. Well, thank you so much, you two, for joining us and for explaining to us the magnitude of this second, next decade of celebration of the Marx Brothers. Noah, I've already heard your voice, and I'm wondering, first of all, when you woke up one morning at the age of 10, having maybe seen, having your father taken you to a Marx Brothers movie or two, you said, I can do that. Something about hearing you and your affinity for the Marx Brothers makes me wonder when this passion for more than a passion, becoming a Marx Brothers revivalist and picking out their very first Broadway show to revive. Tell us a little bit about your connection, your obsession.
That is a fair word to use.
I think
that is
so.
There's an array of clinical terminology to describe this, and that one is more than fair.
And the thousands of people that will be at the festival, as you maybe Kathy predicted, in Harpo wigs and Groucho and Groucho mustache glasses.
Oh, well, it is reassuring that we're not alone. Yes. Yeah, you've got it pretty much correct. As a young kid, I accidentally discovered and fell in love with the Marx Brothers. And like, I think a lot of people who feel drawn to them in childhood, there were sort of 2 impulses. One was, I want to know everything about these guys and see all their films and read everything written about them. And then there was a twin impulse, which was, I also kind of want to be these guys. Like, I want to talk like that. I want to dress like that. That's what I want to do and be. And, you know, I was a hammy little drama kid, and the idea of relating to the characters of the Marx Brothers, and specifically Groucho, was just instant. And it was a very short walk from seeing my first Marx Brothers movie to stealing my mother's eyebrow pencil and giving myself a Groucho mustache in the bathroom mirror.
Now, how'd your parents react to all that? They must have been, I mean, they were the ones who took you to the movie to begin with, right?
Yeah, well, they helped me get exposed to them. I actually first encountered them in a book that my parents had on their shelves, a book by Joe Adamson called Groucho, Harpo, Chico, and Sometimes Zeppo, which remains perhaps the fan favorite of all the books written about them. And yeah, when I was a little kid, even before I could read, I was just drawn to the pictures in this book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I was a kid growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, I was immersed in the Muppets and Dr. Seuss. And, you know, the Marx Brothers sort of felt continuous with a lot of the culture I was already exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Were you, now I'm trying to remember, because I think, was it in the 60s that the great revival began of,
yeah,
of
60s
the
and
Marx
70s.
Brothers? Yeah, when they played at art houses and then became supremely popular. The wit and the anarchy of them really, I think, caught on among the, you know, the young revolutionaries or the new generation just emerging out of the silent one, you know, the McCarthy generation. And they became hugely, hugely popular. Now, let's turn to Kathy, who is an unusual zealot, a Marx Brothers zealot, because there are, at least I don't know that there are so many women who like to dress up as Groucho, but I'd like to ask you how you became infatuated with the Marx Brothers.
First off, I do not cosplay the Marx Brothers. I know women who do, but I do not.
What was the word? Cosplay.
I don't dress up as the
Marx. I see, as a Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
Right. You can.
However,
there's certainly a Marx Brothers female image that we got going there with Dumont and Kitty Carlisle. I don't know which of those.
Dumont was in the first few clips of anything I ever saw. I first got a glimpse of, unfortunately, it was the big store, of Harpo working at a typewriter and doing all kinds of crazy things in an office. And then Margaret Dumont walks in. I was never particularly engaged with her, but I read my way through certain portions of the Dewey Decimal System as a preteen, and one of them involved old movies. So I read a lot of books, and like Noah, I read a lot about the Marx Brothers, and then I saw a double feature of A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races in a packed Art Deco theater in Dallas, Texas, and I hurt. I was laughing so hard. And what is particularly noteworthy about this is my girlfriend that I was with came to all of our, I'll say she is, performances at the first Marx Fest, the reading. She came to the Fringe Festival. She came to the revival at the Connolly Theater. And then she's parking herself in New York for 2 weeks for this current one. So there are women who are very, very engaged with it.
Right.
Now, I got pulled into the Dumont orbit quite unintentionally. Some friends of mine, I was still living in Houston, were making a video that was a parody that put the Marx Brothers on the deck of the Starship Enterprises. And I was walking out of a restaurant and a friend stopped me and said, would you be insulted if you were asked to impersonate Margaret Dumont? And a couple of words that probably shouldn't be said on the air came out.
And don't
out
say
of
them, please. Okay.
That were basically, I would not be insulted, and I would do a, you know what, good job of it. And then that led to a whole sequence of events that ultimately snowballed into, believe it or not, my moving to New York City. So I have been a fan for decades and decades and decades. I have quite a library myself, learned a whole bunch of things. But once I moved to New York, it it just ratcheted up into another level, especially once you start meeting blood relatives of them. It really changes your life.
How many blood relatives of the Marx Brothers survive? And are they funny or are they studious? Or are they, you know, what is their what's their ambiance? If there's such a thing. We got Andy Marx, who's a grandson. Is Melissa Marx still alive?
Melinda,
daughter. Melinda, I'm sorry, his daughter.
Yeah.
And who else?
She is. There are others. Some of Harpo's children are still with us. And there's a generation of Marx's grandchildren and great-grandchildren in the world now.
Wow.
And yeah, I would say, you know, in my experience with members of the family, sure, some of them, you spend time with them and you think, oh, well, this is obviously a person descended from the Marx Brothers.
Really?
Some of them, it's less on the surface, you know.
But tell us, what are the little signs of recognition there
sometimes it's like a either something physical or vocal, or you know, Andy Marx is the Marx family member personally I've spent the most time with, and sure, when I'm talking to Andy, sometimes there'll be a twinkle in his eyes that I suddenly see Groucho in his face, you know, that sure, that
uh-huh,
happens.
Uh-huh. Did he know his grandfather? How
yes,
old is he?
He did. I'm not sure his exact age. I'd say he's in his 60s. And yes, in the late Groucho period, Andy Marx was often around Groucho's house. And a lot of the books about Groucho, the accounts of his final decade, Andy was a fixture in his house and often played the piano. Andy's a very talented musician that also runs in the family.
Well, that does run in the family, yeah.
And he would accompany his grandfather on the piano.
Were Gummo and Zeppo musical too? Because Groucho could sing, Harpo could play the harp, and I guess the piano also, and Chico played the piano. What about the two other brothers? And do they have children too?
Yes, they do have. They did have families, and Gummo was apparently a very talented dancer. Huh. Gummo was only in the act until 1917,
and
he left to fight in World War I when he served bravely in Illinois. But he was out of the act, and so was his dance specialty. Zeppo, who replaced Gummo, wasn't quite as advanced a performer. He sang a little, he danced a little, and he was a capable comedian.
Maybe he wasn't as hungry as the youngest.
He was significantly young. He was almost a generation younger than the oldest brothers. Yeah. He was very much the baby boy.
Wow. Now, the crowd, I mean, the fandom of the Marx Brothers is also spectacular. Are they all going to really, are they going to come showing up in costume? And what is the, how scholarly and how imitative? I mean, does everybody just go wisecracking around like Groucho and know every bit and every, does it get on your nerves, or is it all just a big, you know, do people try to outdo each other in their grouchiness or their harponess? Is that a way, does that happen? Yes?
It's probably some of that. I find the Marx Brothers fan community is a very good-spirited, happy, welcoming crowd. And yeah, everyone has their own ways of celebrating the Marx Brothers. For some, it's by showing up, looking and talking and acting like them. Some are quieter fans. We've tried to make Marx Fest appeal to all levels of interest in the Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
You know, if you're an obsessive, rabid fan like we are, if you know the films by heart and you've read all the books and you listen to the podcast all the time, you will still find stuff about the Marx Brothers that you don't know yet. You'll hear recordings of them that you haven't heard before. But if you're just a casual fan who's interested in comedy and old time showbiz and Broadway theater, but you don't know everything about the Marx Brothers, you'll still feel very included. There's a lot of general interest stuff, and it should be more than anything a fun and funny.
Do I see there are a lot of, I mean, the special guests, Bob Klein, Robert Klein and Adam Gopnik, all these are fairly significant people in the having absorbed and studied and understood the Marx Brothers and their impact in various ways in various decades. But who's among comedians? I mean, there are still so many comedians alive who knew Groucho or encountered him or watched Groucho. Are we expecting a whole bunch of those to be preeminent among the attendees of the various events? You know, every comedian knows the Marx Brothers. They were the same as you as a little kid. Some, whether they were comedians or not at the time they saw them, they were influenced by Groucho or know of, you know, a thousand bits of Marx Brothers material. What's your sense of the crowd coming to in Manhattan and in Coney Island? Don't have one?
I think it's people across the age spectrum. It's surprising. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and there are, believe it or not, a lot of women coming, and there are people who have their own like areas of specialty. So people who know an awful lot about certain things. If you're saying, are there really high profile comedic performer names? Probably
well, we have,
not that.
Well, Robert Klein is. That's for
well,
sure.
he's
and,
yes,
and he didn't know. He must have known Groucho as well, right?
He had brushes with him, right? That's my
guess. He'll talk about that.
With him. David and I had a brush with him. It's a perfect time to. We were hired by Texaco, who had hired Groucho, to perform commercials for Texaco. And so we wrote a whole batch of them, and we worked with a guy. I don't know if you know him. I just saw him recently in the film of Guys and Dolls, Danny Dayton. He was a guy in a yellow suit, but he was a prominent, you know, sort of second banana in movies and stage. And he had started to work in advertising. And so he was our supervisor. And we wrote a batch of commercials for Groucho. He loved him. We loved him. Texaco loved him. We brought him in that morning. Groucho was going to be there at the recording studio. And Groucho hated them. He hated them. He was furious at us. And he said, I can't do these. My brothers will sue me, he said, because they were, you know, they were kind of capture the rhythm of the brothers in the movies, which is very fast paced and overlapping, all that sort of thing. I can't do these. My brothers will sue me. And then it took me maybe a year to realize that Groucho had outlived his ability to be that fast. He was in his much more laid back cigar smoking mode, you know, by then. I mean, as seemingly heartbreaking as it was still meeting Groucho, you know? It was still meeting and hearing that voice saying, I hate these, my brothers will sue me. And that apparently, do we know that the brothers argued or had, you know, problems over who owned what among their, you know, comedy bits or hunks of material?
There was a lot of that kind of dispute among them, but you might be happy to know you're by no means alone. I mean, Groucho was famously tough on writers, especially later in his career, you know, and earlier, too, said,
I heard one line of my script.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Standing backstage in a Broadway. Right.
Yeah, when S.J. Perelman and Will B. Johnstone, you know, great comedy writers, right, read the first draft of Monkey Business to a room full of producers and performers, after he finished the reading, there was a long pause, and Groucho said, well, it stinks.
I feel great already.
Well, and this is one, you know, it's one of the greatest humorists of the 20th century. So yeah, you're in very good company. He was tough on writers, and I think he knew how important writers were to what he did. And he himself was a comic writer of some significance.
Absolutely.
And wrote books and stories. And I think he was very hard to please on that count.
Wow.
But, you know, to the point of all the interest in the Marx Brothers coming from high places like Adam Gopnik, you know, I mean, one of our greatest living writers and a beloved New Yorker staff writer who he has returned to the subject of the Marx Brothers again and again in his writing, using them as a metaphor or as an historic yardstick for talking about other parts of show business.
Well, and talk about what that yardstick is.
Well, I think it's that the Marx Brothers operate on many levels, and among the disparities in their work, they can be very lowbrow and very highbrow.
Right.
And, you know, so they're very good at physical comedy and sight gags and comedy that anyone of any level of sophistication can find funny. Really? And then running through their work, there is also this strain of incredibly elevated verbal humor,
right,
that is fast and sophisticated and requires many viewings to catch,
right,
all of it.
Right.
So people like George S. Kaufman and S.J. Perelman, mm-hmm, who were unrivaled as humorists, wrote for the Marx Brothers and found it challenging. You know, I mean, it was a hard thing to do, to provide material for these guys. And
Groucho was so witty, so fast. So, and all of them responded to each other with such agility. It was remarkable how a writer might feel, since they could do this off the cuff at any given moment, right?
Yeah.
That was their strength, that they could improvise.
Well, may I make an observation here? Part of it was due to how long they worked together on the road. They were long-standing vaudeville performers for, what, 20 years? A long, long time.
You mean before their Broadway debut?
Yeah, and so that Broadway show that we're celebrating is their transition point from working the road in the country to erupting as a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And it went from there. So I'll say She Is when they really, like, got canoned into another way of existence.
And became the darlings of the intelligentsia of that period, the New Yorker crowd, the Algonquin Round Table.
And you could see that the interest in them from the Adam Gopniks and Jason Zinnemans of the world is very continuous with the way Alexander Wolcott and Dorothy Parker and Robert Benchley felt about them in the 1920s. You know, they've always had this double appeal. The sophisticates can laugh at them and feel they're getting away with something, and the unsophisticates can just laugh at them.
Did Chaplin ever see the Marx Brothers? And was he a fan? Was he a fan?
They were close. They were mutual fans and friends. Groucho and Chaplin always credited each other as the greatest film comedian.
Each other? Oh, that's interesting. So Groucho was impressed with Chaplin. Well, that's
totally opposite. You couldn't have two more opposite approaches to comedy.
Absolutely right. Yeah. One so verbal and one so not.
And Chaplin appealed to your sympathies. You know, Chaplin was a storyteller. Groucho was much more of a deconstructionist.
Right. And talk a little bit. It almost looks like it's time for a pitch break and to be followed by another tune sung. Well, it's not going to be sung by Harpo. We didn't talk. It will be Groucho that you'll hear singing Hooray for Captain Spaulding. So let's take that little break and come back and talk some more. We're never going to get to the end of this subject. That is for sure. Why you got to go to two long weekends of Groucho, Zeppo, Chico, Harpo. Who did I leave out? Gummo. The whole wonderful weekends long. Okay, so here we go with a little break. And now, a WBAI fundraising request. As always, we're asking you to contribute to WBAI's very survival by calling 212-209-2950 or going online to give to WBAI.org and becoming a BAI buddy. That's a sustaining member of this unique radio station, which is so crammed with diverse voices, opinions, and thought. It has been called a University of the Air.
You become a BAI buddy by making a monthly donation as little as $10 or as much as you can that is painlessly deducted from your bank account or credit card.
You can donate in the name of your favorite WBAI programs, such as Cat Radio Cafe,
or all or any of WBAI's programs. Call 212-209-2950 or go online to give to WBAI.org.
For over 60 miraculous years, we haven't been here for all of them, but just about. WBAI has depended on the financial support of its listeners.
You know, if there's no listener support, there is no WBAI.
So, please chip in.
You know, keep our signal strong and loud, and keep independent media and free political and artistic expression alive.
Yes, we live in lousy times. I can't believe them. They are so lousy. So let's not make them worse. Remember, as the main man of existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre said,
there may be more beautiful times, but this one is ours.
That's a French accent if ever I heard it.
He didn't speak with a French accent. He spoke French.
That's right.
Yeah.
In other words, in French words, perfect time to support WBAI.
certainly grateful for this magnificent washout, a turnout. And now I'd like to say a few words. Hello? I must be going. I cannot stay. I came to say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going. La la.
For my sake, you must stay. If you should go away, you spoil this party. I am through.
I'll stay a week or two. I'll stay in the summer through. But I am telling you, I must be. But I must be going.
There's something that I'd like to say that he's too modest to relay. The captain is a moral man. Sometimes he finds a trial.
This fact I'll emphasize with stress. I never take a drink unless somebody's buying.
The captain is a very moral man.
If he hears anything obscene, he'll naturally repel it.
I hate a dirty joke, I do. Unless it's told by someone who knows how to tell it.
The captain is a very moral man. Or make a man who's more than the African explorer.
Did someone call me Schnurrer?
Hooray, hooray, hooray.
He went into the jungle where all the monkeys throw nuts.
If I stay here, I'll go nuts.
Hooray, hooray, hooray.
This magnificent display of effusion. And I want you to know. My friends, I am highly gratified at this magnificent display of effusion. And I want you to know.
Hooray. Amazing the way that. Still, the vitality of that still lives. They are just amazing. Who's your favorite Marx Brothers show? Or who is the general? Does that, anybody have a favorite Marx Brother? Or is it the collection that everybody is really moved the most by, the brothers together? You have an answer for that? You must, I mean, you have succeeded in, Noah, you are an imitator and a preservationist of Marx, you know, Groucho. So is, you didn't imitate the others, or did you?
Yeah, well, that's true. Bit. And yes, if I had to choose a favorite Marx brother, Groucho is definitely my guy. I mean, Groucho is closest right to my heart. And from a very young age, I sort of identified with him and thought of his face and voice almost as family features, you know. So yes, but I do think it is still true that it's really the collective impact of the four Marx Brothers that really makes them great. I mean, Groucho by himself as a solo artist after the team broke up was absolutely the greatest comedian ever.
Yes.
But as far as the real magic that we're celebrating at Marx Fest, it's the team. There's something about the togetherness of those guys that achieved something no individual artist could ever achieve.
Right, that brotherhood, that kind of collectivity is so amazing, really. You wonder if you could, well, I mean, everybody aspires to it now who's in a troupe of any kind.
Yeah,
a comedy troupe.
It's what all casts want to have, which is chemistry. You know, those guys had perfect chemistry, and being siblings had its advantages, probably also had its disadvantages, but they were as close as four human beings have ever been, or five, you know, and that's part of what allowed them to work so beautifully together. But obviously not all sibling groups have that. They were special, you know, those guys were special.
Well, were they at all influenced by other brother groups, or was it the other way around?
Groups, but they were certainly influenced by other comedians.
Their uncles were famous comedians. Gallagher and Sheen were.
Al Sheen was their uncle,
Sheen was an uncle,
and he was a great vaudeville comedian who preceded them, and he was their role model and kind of showed them that show business was an option, you know, a place where they could have a career. You know, these are as the sons of Jewish immigrants growing up in New York City at the very beginning of the 20th century. And Al Sheen was a Dutch comedian, you know, who did comedy with a German accent. And Groucho started off very much in that mold. And one way to sort of understand the Marx Brothers is as a summary of American comedy up to them. You know, they're kind of like an encyclopedia of American humor. They do it all.
And also Italian humor. I mean, when you think about it, the sort of...
Yeah, well, the sort of ethnic prototypes. Melting pot. Yeah.
Yeah. The mute, Harpo, who was so physical and so... And also so beloved by the literati. In person, Harpo was one of the regulars of the Algonquin Roundtable. Well, and Chico, I guess, lived on another planet in a sort of world of gambling and women. He was the renegade, the true renegade among the Marx Brothers. To tell a little bit about some of these events, because there's so much to say about these guys. You want to describe where you're flashing your light, where you're, you know, what you're focusing on in this festival and why. Can you talk about a couple of the events that...
Can I bring that up before I have to go?
Noah? Yeah, sure, sure.
We are spotlighting Harpo. We're spotlighting the creative genius of Harpo with several performers who have stepped, who have donned his trench coat, including one who, as a very young man, got Harpo's widow's permission to write a one-man show about Harpo. And he's also a very talented musician. So
who is this?
That's Les Marsden.
Les Marsden. Does he have the coat with him so he can put all the silverware in it?
I don't know if he ever did the silverware gag, but... Uh-huh.
I saw him in Animal Crackers in 1992.
Well, I saw him in 2000, so he did it for a long time. Uh-huh. So we've got him. We've got Seth Sheldon, who played Harpo in Alsatias. We have a member of the burlesque tribute to the Marx Brothers, burlesque representing the, like, corny old joke of American humor that some of their stuff came out of. And then we also have what I'm calling Harpo the Next Generation, a young performer who is a tremendous harpist, who also appears as Harpo. And I don't know whether they're going to show up that way or not. But but we also have with that a professor who has written a book on the role of Harpo as the archetype of the trickster. So that's going to be at Coney Island, and that's exploring, again, the magic and artistry of Harpo from a number of different perspectives. I don't believe that sort of thing has been done anywhere.
Wonderful. That's a great idea, isn't it? And anybody for Chico there? Does he get any credit? Does he get authoritative dissertations about himself?
Well, there isn't a specific Chico event on the schedule, but you'll hear a lot about Chico, I predict, in the presentation that Robert Bader and Paul Wesolowski are giving. That's on May 19th, Sunday morning. Robert Bader, who's the author of the book Four of the Three Musketeers, the most thoroughly researched and authoritative book about the Marx Brothers' stage career. And Paul Wesolowski, a former editor of the Fredonia Review and a longtime linchpin of the Marx Brothers fan community. Those guys are going to be doing a presentation together about Home Again, which was the most important vaudeville tab the Marx Brothers appeared in before they got to Broadway. And those were the years when Chico became Chico. So I suspect that'll be a Chico-heavy event, among many other things.
A Chico-heavy event. You know, I mean, Groucho himself... Of course, we threw in Jean-Paul Sartre earlier. We might as well throw in T.S. Eliot, too. He had a correspondence, a fabled correspondence with T.S. Eliot. And I mean, how strange it must have been for Harpo, who regretted, Groucho, who regretted his lack of formal education, I guess, to to the end of his life, was so revered by all these master intellectuals and would be, how do you suppose he would react to all of these thinkers and writers and speculators on his, on the intellect of his comedy? How would he feel now? Would he accepting or finally? I guess he got used to it, didn't he?
Yeah, I think Groucho wore that stuff as a badge. You know, he was proud of it. Groucho was very self-conscious about his lack of formal education. Yeah. Like many autodidactic people,
sure,
he did a better job educating himself than most people get in college. But he was self-conscious about it and always very proud of his high-profile admirers.
He was. Oh, and so this kind of thing would be... make him overjoyed, although he got used to it.
Do the
Marx Brothers fandom events and assessments of Groucho and Marbo and Jugo and Gomo come periodically? Do they come in waves, and do they follow any particular kind of anarchic path of history? You know, when things are getting too repressive, are there more Marx Brothers fans? And when time is up for the repression, does everyone bust loose into Marxism? Let's call it Marxism.
Yeah, there may be something to that. Yes, I think, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the Marx Brothers revival of the 60s and 70s seemed to coincide with the Vietnam protest movement.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the Marx Brothers are often anti-establishment icons.
Very much.
And people on all sides of most conflicts tend to identify with them.
On all sides of all, yeah, go ahead.
This is a theme of the author, Charlene Fix, who's going to be talking about the Harpo as trickster, because tricksters tend to show up during times of great tumult and help realign relation to power.
Oh, because they speak truth to it. Isn't that it? They defy power.
Yeah.
Through their wily, tricky ways. Yeah, he was something, wasn't he?
I regret I'm going to have to leave. It's been lovely, and
Thank you so much.
Very good hands.
Stay in Coney Island. Now, what is the difference of the spots in Manhattan that have been chosen and in Coney Island? Why the two venues particularly? The Marx Brothers never lived in Coney Island, did they? They lived in what is now Upper East Side,
Yorkville,
Harlem,
yeah.
East Harlem, Yorkville.
Yeah, the New York home that they stayed in for the longest period was in Yorkville on East 93rd Street. The building is still there, 179 East 93rd Street. Wow. They never lived in Brooklyn, but Harpo made his stage debut at Coney Island.
He did.
At Henderson's Music Hall in 1908. So that's one connection.
All by himself, without his brothers?
No, with the family. At that point, Chico wasn't in the act yet, but Groucho and Gummo were. And Harpo.
Gummo and Groucho, the two were the leading figures in the original performance.
That's right. Groucho was the, they were the first two to enter show business. Groucho first, and then Gummo joined his brother. And Groucho and Gummo were two members of a singing trio. That was sort of the first Marx Brothers act.
Who was the third member of the trio?
There was a kind of rotating slot there. There were people whose names are mostly lost to history now. Mabel O'Donnell was the name of one of their co-stars. Another was named Lou Levy. But these were vaudevillians who auditioned for the chance to be Marx Brothers and toured with them for some time.
To be Marx Brothers? Were they called Marx Brothers?
Figuratively speaking, to be in their act.
Okay.
You know.
Now, was Minnie Marx, their mother, in charge of that iteration of Marx Brotherism?
Yeah, Minnie was their mother, and she was one of the classic stage mothers of American history. She took over as their manager pretty soon after Groucho and Gummo began appearing in vaudeville.
I see.
And she got them through the tough years, you know, mostly by believing in them and pushing them on stage and making it clear that the family would be able to pay the rent or not based on how funny that audience thinks your jokes are.
Well, how in the world did Harpo acquire a harp when they were in such...
It seems
conditions.
Like the most unlikely thing.
Yeah.
Well, his maternal grandmother, Minnie's mother, whose name was Fanny Schoenberg, had been a harpist. She and her husband, the Marx Brothers' grandfather, were itinerant performers in the old country in Germany. And she played the harp. Now, by the time they got to Yorkville, she lived with the family, and her harp was in their home, but it didn't have any strings on it. It was in a terrible state of disrepair. And Harpo, as a little boy, would stare at it and wonder what it sounded like. So it was sort of planted in his unconscious or in his conscious mind at that time. And then later, during the vaudeville years, Harpo was a little slow to develop a specialty. It took a while for him to realize that by not talking, he could be funnier silent than as a talking comedian. And perhaps sensing that he needed a specialty, Minnie sent him a harp one day and said, you've got to make the payments on this and don't get it wet. And this is your new specialty. Wow. And Harpo learned how to play it by trial and error just because he was an intuitive musical genius.
And did they schlep that harp through vaudeville?
Yes.
So that might have been the centerpiece of their travels, really.
Well, I think one reason it was a good choice is because a harp is so dazzling to look at. I mean, a harp on stage, even in a rundown vaudeville theater in the middle of nowhere, and it really gets people's attention. And the Marx Brothers tended to travel in vaudeville with a whole railroad car full of scenery and costumes, and they had a chorus. You know, their act was more like theater. It was like a mini musical.
Yeah.
More than
that was a very upscale kind of a presentation for vaudeville, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And a lot of their peers, you know, comedians like Jack Benny and Will Rogers and Burns and Allen, that whole generation of comics mostly were comedians who worked in one. You know, they would come out in front of the curtain and
or
just
two.
Do jokes. Yeah, in one or in two-thirds of the way up the stage.
Yeah.
But the Marx Brothers really put on big productions almost from the beginning. It was always a big show. They always had a scene to play, and they usually got their laughs by violating whatever you expected that scene to be.
Right. So who wrote this the play that you revived?
I'll say she is. Most of it was written by Will B. Johnstone, who is a somewhat obscure figure, but a great writer who co-wrote Horse Feathers and Monkey Business, two of the Marx Brothers' best films.
Right.
And he was also a very significant political cartoonist. He was a cartoonist for the New York World for many years. And he, in fact, during the Depression, he invented the iconic cartoon of the naked taxpayer wearing a barrel. That was his contribution to 20th century culture. Plus, he did all this great writing for the Marx Brothers.
Absolutely. And they were friendly towards his politics too, I assume.
Yeah, I believe so.
They didn't have to be because their politics was so out of this world, really. Out of this world.
Yeah. Oh, the Marx Brothers were definitely old fashioned liberals, you know. And but yes, it was, you know, it was a less complicated time in that regard. But they had, they had a wide. Yeah. Right. You're right. Well, what am I looking for then? Less fractious, perhaps?
I don't know. There was a Russian Revolution, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you do see the 20th century unfolding in the background of the Marx Brothers catalog, you know, in the 1920s before the crash. It's all whimsy and wonderful nonsense. Harpo is the most popular Marx Brother because he is the most whimsical. And then in the 30s, there's a darker quality to the comedy and Groucho's cynicism moves to the spotlight.
That's so interesting. Really, it really is. And which of the movies have the most popularity right now? I mean, they're...
Oh, it's a good question.
Early ones the most, you know, the charming, hilarious ones or the... Slightly more smooth and Kitty Carlisle, you know, Night at the Opera, those movies. Which are the most popular among real aficionados?
I would say that the favorites are the first six movies. The five they made at Paramount and A Night at the Opera, the Kitty Carlisle film that you mentioned. It is true. They only made 13 films as a team. And the second half of their film career, although they were still great, there's a decline in the second half. Right. But those first five films, Coconuts, Animal Crackers, Monkey Business, Horse Feathers, Duck Soup, and A Night at the Opera are really among the greatest achievements in the history of comedy. And we're lucky that they made those films because they were basically a stage act, and they made their movies in a state of semi-retirement as a kind of afterthought to a career that largely had already taken place.
For them.
In some ways, their stage career really, that those were their prime years. And the films are just a great record of what they were able to do on stage.
What did they consider the great, great movies? Did they have any particular judgment about those?
Well, they were very positive about A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races. I think partly because those were their biggest moneymakers. You know, those were their most mainstream successes, their biggest commercial hits. And they had, as you mentioned, a sort of a sheen of respectability that the earlier films don't. Now, I would say favor has turned more toward the early ones. And in some of his later interviews, Groucho would say that that Duck Soup was also a favorite of his, and Animal Crackers. Arguably, Duck Soup and Animal Crackers are maybe the fan favorites among the Paramounts, but it's very close.
Wow. What is Robert Klein going to be doing on this?
Oh, he'll be giving a talk. It's actually a conversation with Jason Zinnemann, a comedy columnist for The New York Times. That's going to be on Sunday, May 19th. Klein is going to give a talk about his enthusiasm for the Marx Brothers, which is considerable. His experiences. Yeah, absolutely.
And did he have a history with Groucho at all?
Yeah, he knew Groucho a bit in the later years, and he'll talk about that and the brothers' influence. And absolutely, yeah, everyone's, of course, excited to have a comedy legend, particularly this comedy legend, speaking at the festival. It'll be great.
Right. Oh, the whole thing sounds just magnificent. Are any particular venues of great interest, theaters? You mentioned some kind of theater in, is it in Coney Island or is it? By the way, there is a Marx Brothers Park, isn't there?
Yes, there is a Marx Brothers Playground.
Playground. Whoa, that is just so exciting to know that little kids can be playing and playing, developing Marx Brothers routines as they are on the monkey bars or something. It sounds great. So
that's right.
What are the outstanding venues that we're going to see Marx Brothers events in, and how do they connect to the history of the Marx Brothers?
Well, most of our Manhattan weekend events are at the Three West Club, which is at 3 West 51st Street between 5th and 6th. That specific building doesn't have much Marx Brothers history to it, but it is a beautiful Manhattan location. It's 12 blocks from the site of the Casino Theater, where they made their Broadway debut 100 years ago. And those events are just kind of in beautiful ballrooms, which are, you know, it'll be a thrilling place to spend the time. There is going to be a walking tour on Saturday, May 18th. I'll be leading a walking tour all about the Marx Brothers years on Broadway, and we'll actually be visiting the sites of the theaters where the brothers appeared and walking in their footsteps a little bit around the theater district.
Do any of the theaters still have the same names or same interiors? We got 1 minute to go.
The one that still survives is the Palace. When the Palace was a vaudeville theater, they appeared there many times, and the Palace lives. But no, the three Broadway theaters they appeared in their original productions in are all gone. But we'll visit their locations and leave a flower.
And tell us in about 10 seconds, where in Coney are we going to be going?
Oh, at Coney Island, USA, which is a theater and museum space on Surf Avenue, right on the main track.
Can you get a crowd in there, or I guess pack them in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And at marxfest.org, you can find tickets, information, everything there is to know about more than 20 events coming May 17th through the 26th.
Wow. Fantastico. That sounds so great. I have 100 million more questions to ask you. I know you know the answers. What happened to that awful last wife of Groucho?
Oh, you must be talking about Erin Fleming.
Yes. We don't have time for the answer.
You'll have me back on sometime and I'll answer about Erin Fleming. Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Right. A duck is going to come down and give us the answer. Well, you've been listening to Cat Radio Cafe, heard Tuesdays at 9 p.m. on WBAI. I'm Jenna Coleman, and you are...
David Dozer.
You, the displaced playwright. You can reach us at catradiocafe@gmail.com, and you can sign up as a BAI buddy by making any contribution to WBAI by calling 212-209-2950.
Or online at WBAI.org.
Yeah, with special thanks to Bob Auld. On tonight's show, we were joined by Marx Brothers experts Noah Diamond and Kathy Beal to discuss Marx Fest 2024, a celebration of the legacy of Chico, Harpo, Groucho, Gummo, and Zeppo, with over 24 events in the city of their birth. Marx Fest 2024 runs from May 17th through 19th in Manhattan and May 24th through 26th in Coney Island. There will be special guest talks, screenings, parties, and performances at venues throughout Manhattan and Brooklyn. For tickets and information, go to MarxFestM.org. Stay tuned for the sweet spot.
Bye.
Goodbye, and thank you so much.
Tune to listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, and here's Samori Marksman, supporter of human rights and the international peace movement, a much-loved program director here at WBAI, reflecting on the 60s.
I'm torn by the tragedy of seeing great people pass. Kind of make me sort of wonder. I mean, it kind of make us feel that it's our turn next, you know, because a lot of people who left town are people whom we knew. I look at many people like Stokely Carmichael, of course, Kwame Ture, and having known him and so on, it's touched me, and I just, looking at something earlier and saw his name again, and it just kind of reminded me about that there isn't much left for those of us who were around in the 60s, you know, with people like that. People like John Henry Clark, another personal friend who, took so much with him. And many of the other figures who we looked at, many entertainers and you know, other people who made great contributions. And, I'm ending with this sense of great loss, but I'm also ending on a tone of not only pondering and reflecting on these things, but being genuinely concerned.
Speaking of genuine concern, this is WBAI New York, and we're asking you to help WBAI, help keep it on the air. Support WBAI's Tower Fund. Go to towerfund.wbai.org. Keep it going. Call 212-209-2950. Support WBAI. Contribute what you can to keep this experiment, long-running experiment in free speech, in alternate views, in progressive commentary and programming you won't hear anywhere on the mainstream. Let's keep it alive. Let's keep it going.
No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
Give us a call, 212-209-2950. Support WBAI. In honor of Samori and all of the broadcasters and guests who have appeared on WBAI through the ages, preserving a platform for future speakers, for future voices to come on the air right here in the center of the FM dial at 99.5 FM, to come on to WBAI, to come on to this platform and share their views and engage with you, please help support WBAI, 212-209-2950, in honor of Samori and all the other voices you've heard here on WBAI, and all the voices that you will hear, but you don't even know who you're going to hear, but you'll hear them if you tune in to 99.5 FM in the center of the FM dial, or if you listen online, as so many of our listeners do, at WBAI.org. Please come forward and support WBAI. Become a listener member of WBAI for $25 for the year, or become a BAI buddy, a sustaining member, for $15 or more a month. And this helps WBAI know how much money is coming in, because WBAI doesn't get any corporate sponsorship. Our sponsorship is from you, our listeners, who support WBAI, who appreciate WBAI, who want to uplift WBAI and the voices that you can hear on this listener-sponsored station. Again, 212-209-2950. Please come forward right now. Let's do it for Samori. Let's do it for the other Samoris who are yet to be heard on WBAI. We thank you for your support. Please come forward now and give us a call, 212-209-2950. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No peace, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace, no justice.